Quite some years ago, I read a book by a French writer, Carl Georges Bataille, about inner experience. And at the beginning, he wrote that he's not looking for, or does not care for being coherent. And I thought that's very interesting. He's writing a book about religion, and he starts by saying that I'm not going to subject myself to the necessity to be coherent. In a sense, who says, what says, that coherence is a necessity? So we may understand that he wanted to be free from any outside power, outside values, which would impose on him not to write exactly what he wanted for the sake of coherence. So he took this freedom, a fantastic freedom, not to try to be coherent. So maybe tonight I'll take the same freedom. Last night I tried to be coherent, and tonight maybe I'll take the freedom from that. I have spoken the other day about the noble man or noble woman, explaining that noble man or noble woman are the inner man, inner woman, and the opposite is the outer man, outer woman, who would be only concerned by outside values, but not by inner freedom, by inner peace. So I'm going to speak tonight again about inner values. So if I use words as a metaphor, please understand that I'm speaking about inner values. I want to use a metaphor which I have used not long ago in Boston, teaching also to a Jewish community. And I know it is a word which is very strong, and that may be why I'm using it. But please be aware, I'm using it only as an inner value. This word and metaphor I like to use is the metaphor of exile. And in a sense, as long as we are not present, we are in exile. As long as we are lost in past, we are lost in future, we are lost in imagination, we are in exile. So we may wonder now, we try to practice meditation with a sense of trying to be present, and maybe putting that as a name, expressed in being present or being complete, a sense of fulfillment, a sense of completeness, totality. So I come to my sitting. I understand, that's fine. It seems nice to feel complete, to feel the totality of one's being. That seems a nice objective. So I come that in mind, with that in mind, I am sitting with this aim. And as long as I have this aim, I am in exile. As long as I have as an aim to be present, as long as I have as an aim to be complete, I will be fragmented. The wish for something which is not here, the longing for something which is not here, keep us fragmented, keep us expecting, keep us looking for something in the future. Therefore, as long as we have an aim in our meditation, we are in exile. Now, strangely enough, it's not that we are not in our home, it's not that we are not in our homeland. We are in exile in our own home, we are in exile in our own homeland. We are in this fantastic situation that we feel in exile in our own home. So what does it mean? As I have explained the other day, it is impossible not to be present. Where could we be? Can we see this morning? Can we see tomorrow, now? It's completely impossible. Can we walk after 5 minutes, now? It is completely impossible not to be present. Yet we are not present. Our home is to be present. To be in exile is not to realize that we can only be present. To be in exile is not to realize or to be that when our homeland is hidden, we don't recognize it and we sit in exile. Now what is hidden, the present situation, that we cannot experience the fullness of our being, that we cannot experience the fullness of our presence? What is hiding? What is hiding our home that we don't recognize it? What is hiding our home that we feel fragmented, not complete, we fit in exile? Time is hiding our home. Time is our exile. As soon as we have the sense in our practice, we understand first the sense of past and future, because I have thought about the past, what was before, plan about the future, what will come next. That may be understood quite clearly. Oh yes, I'm lost in thought about the past. I am lost in thought about the future. One understands that clearly. But the notion of time is more subtle than just expressed in words of time. The notion of time is experienced or lived or held on to not only in words or concept of time. When I'm experiencing something right now and I want to transform this experience, whatever the experience may be, physical sensation, emotion, if I want to transform it, what's happening there in this movement of transformation? In a sense, transformation cannot happen without duration. For transformation to happen, they need time. Now, when experience is happening now, the wish for transformation implies first that I have a concept, an image, about what I would like or how I would like to transform this experience. So I have a concept, an image of what I would like to replace what's happening now with. Take a very simple example. If I have pain in my knee, now if I want to transform that, very clearly I have an image, a concept of an experience without this pain. So that now what I like to transform this experience into experience of a knee without intense pain. And in this movement, this concept, image of this absence of a pain, it's just a concept, an image, and I'm trying now to promote, to bring the cause and condition to achieve that. And in this process, of course, there is a notion of time. Whenever I am taken into transforming the aim, the wish to transform, by that I am buying into the notion of time. I don't need to think about past, I don't need to think about the future. The simple intention, the simple wish to transform, bring me into time. So whenever in our practice we want to transform, to improve, we buy into the notion of time, we are in exile, we cannot be fully present. The smallest movement towards something else, this is our exile. It is very obvious when we think about past and future, we can recognize it. Sometimes we are lost, that's fine. Immediately if we recognize it, we understand, oh, I was lost in in past or in future. This is easy to recognize. But those small movements of improvement are much more subtle. And they are very important to recognize. When we are lost in time, it doesn't matter if we are lost 3,000 years ago or 1 second before. That doesn't change. It is as much confusing to be lost very, very short instant before or after, or long duration. It's not that the amount of confusion depends on the amount of time. As soon as we slip out of the experience, buying into the notion of time, we are living the experience. We live in a world of concepts, images, duration. To live in concept, images, it is a world which is very shallow, which has no density, which is impossible to experience with a sense of fullness. So when we try to transform, to improve our meditation, then immediately we make it impossible for us to be fully present. It makes it impossible for us to be complete. Make it impossible for us to experience with intimacy our life, to experience with intimacy our being. What is between us and our experience, so to speak, those images, concepts of time and duration. So time is hiding our home, and we don't recognize it as a home. We don't experience it as a home. And then we feel incomplete, we feel fragmented, we feel in exile. In one of the sutra, I like very much his story about the Buddha. I think it's a very nice one. He said that the Buddha spoke to his monks and nuns, and he said, it is impossible to travel to the end of the world. It is impossible to travel to the end of the world. Then he told them, without traveling to the end of the world, it is impossible to find freedom. What did he do next? He withdrew in his own cell and led the monk and nun perplex. And I think very nice. He did not at this time give full explanation. He just said something completely paradoxical and left. So monks and nuns were just left with this strange statement from the Buddha. Without traveling to the end of the world, which is impossible to travel to the end of the world, and then without traveling to the end of the world, one cannot get freedom. Strange statement. So in a sense, for us, when we feel that we are not present, it is impossible to cultivate the wish to be present. Because if we cultivate the wish to be present, we place that in the future as a name. So we are like the Buddha was explaining to the monks and nuns, we are in a paradoxical situation that it is impossible for us to come here and say, now I'm going to be present. That's my aim for this sitting. I understood what Charles said, be present, therefore that's my aim. I said, so I will be present. If we do that, then we are in exile. We are placing our presence in the future as an abstract, as a concept, and it is not possible for us then to be present. So what to do? We may imagine that to improve our situation, if we feel that we are not present, to improve our sitting, then we'll do something about it. We'll organize as if we were wishing to travel to come back home. So we make preparation, organize, and in a sense being in control. We are trying to control the situation, controlling, experiencing, organizing this condition, that condition, that by this controlling of cause and condition, I will bring the result which I wish for, which is to be present, which is to be home. So by controlling, one may hope very subtle, intelligent, wise control of what's happening. One may hope for getting into the proper meditation. Now, what does it mean to control? Again, I'm speaking about inner experience. What does it mean to control? To control, we need to be at a distance. To control, we need to be at a distance. If we imagine a stream flowing down from the mountain, it is completely impossible for the water in the middle to stop. Say, now I stop. A drop of water, say, I stop in the middle. It's not possible. Only a rock from outside, a trunk placed from outside can stop the water. It's not possible for the water to control its flow because it has no element outside of it to control. Same for the rain. Falling is not possible for the rain halfway down, say, I'll stop there, I'll just rest for some time. Because there is no element there. There is no element that can control. There is no element other than rain. No other element. For control, you need another element, something outside, something different. Therefore, for rain, it's not possible to control it. Falling, and for the flowing of the water, it's not possible to control its stream. Only something outside of it. So when we want to control our experience, to direct it to where we want to go, it means that we are placing ourselves outside of the experience. When we want to control, we are placing ourselves outside of the experience. And this wish to control, this need to control, make it impossible for us to fully experience, because that keeps us outside of the experience. Therefore, if we are outside of the experience, we are outside of the fullness of our being, we're in exile. Control is our exile. As long as we want to control our meditation, as long as we want to control our experience, we are staying in exile. In our practice, we may be aware sometimes when there is fluctuation between the full experiencing of whatever, the full experiencing of the inflow, outflow of the breath, the full experiencing of a bodily sensation, and sometimes fluctuation with being at a distance, and sometimes we may be aware that when we let ourselves go completely with the flow of the experience, at times we can experience some fear because we cannot control. I have to be outside, I can control. We understand well from the water, now if we were a drop of water just rushing down, there is no way to control, we have to trust and just flow down. Now in our experience, sometimes we may perceive the same, that if we let ourselves flow with the flow of experience, and if sometimes we are slightly outside, we can perceive or experience a slight sense of fear, just to be experiencing, fully experiencing. And that may be what sometimes keeps us at a distance. I keep at a distance so I can control. I keep at a distance so I can improve. No improvement from inside. I can improve, transform, act upon the experience. Now about transforming, there is something very tricky. Obviously we can transform. Again, I take this very simple example of pain in the knee. I can transform this experience. If I move, I transform it, and the pain may disappear. We can transform our experience, no doubt. We spend our life transforming our experience, and we can even be successful. We are successful, otherwise we will not keep on transforming. And that's what is tricky. Because we are successful in transforming, we keep on transforming. And because we keep on transforming, we are fragmented. So for the very small benefit of transforming the sensation in my knee, for this very small benefit, we are paying, we are discarding our completeness. We are discarding the fullness of our being. So in a sense, we are not very ambitious when we want to transform. We are always satisfied with very small benefits, a small improvement. Those small improvements are always at the cost of the fullness of our being. Those small improvements will always keep us with the sense that something is lacking. So when we are intelligent meditators, smart in avoiding difficulties by moving every now and then that is very costly. This wish to transform, this wish to control, need to control, this keeps us fragmented, and it's completely impossible to experience the fullness, completeness of our being. Control keeps us at a distance. Take another example. For the fire cannot stop to burn also. Burning, then cannot in the middle say, no, I burn enough, I stop. There is no more wood, of course, the fire doesn't burn anymore, but when it's burning, cannot stop. To stop it, we can bring something from outside, water, earth, wind, and maybe we can stop it. But the fire cannot stop because it needs something outside of it. So when we are in our meditation, with the fullness of experiencing, whatever the experience may be, At this time, we are in our true home. At this time, we are not fragmented. At this time, nothing is lacking. But for that, we have to be willing to pay the price, and the price is small transformation, small improvement. If we are willing to pay, then willing to experience fully this time, it is possible to be fully present, it is possible to experience completeness. In a sense, which technique of meditation is the best? Nowadays we can choose between so many techniques. There is Vipassana, and there is Goenka Vipassana, and there is Dzogchen, and there is Zen, and there is so many techniques. And one may wonder, but which one is the best? What is the best technique for the practice of meditation? When we are seeing meditation as a technique, then we are starting from a strange angle to see the practice. When we see it as a technique, a tool that will be helpful to develop presence, fullness, wisdom, whatever, when we see our practice as a technique, if we see the practice as a technique, it is like if we were to start with the sense of control, to start with the sense that to meditate is to do something, is to control. If I were to take an example as a tool, let's imagine a hammer, for example. So that's a tool, maybe a very good hammer, very efficient, but the hammer, its way of existing, is a very specific. A hammer exists never for its own sake. It only exists for the sake of something else. Any tool exists only, not for itself, only to accomplish something else, something other than themselves. Now we are completely, we are different from the fire, we just take the other point of view. The tool is exactly the opposite of the fire. The tool is exactly the opposite of the water flow. So the tool has no interest, no importance, no existence on its own, only it takes its own meaning only from something outside of itself, from this nail, then the hammer gets its meaning. And tools usually are something that one forget about them, I mean, forget them somewhere. You don't put all the tools in your home, it's very nice, and you know, I have my nice tools, because they really have no existence of their own. The most inauthentic existence is a tool. When it doesn't work anymore, then you throw it away. So if we see the technique of meditation as a tool, the meditation as a tool, as a technique, it means that the technique, the meditation, has no value in its own, is only good for something else. Now we may be very sincerely trying to practice meditation as a technique, but we have already transformed ourselves as a tool, and now we are wishing for authentic being, putting ourselves in a situation of not being for itself, within itself, but for something else. So if we see the practice of meditation for some purpose, benefit outside of the practice itself, then at this time, again we are fragmented, And at this time, we are reducing ourselves and our practice to something which is inauthentic. So we may wonder which technique, which practice. So in a sense, it doesn't matter which tradition we will be following. What does matter is the attitude with which we will be practicing. The attitude is that which is most important. And the meditation cannot be reduced to any technique. The meditation is essentially an attitude. When we see the meditation as a technique, then we are breaking apart our experience, ourselves, and we are, if you wish, putting ourselves in the position of exile by seeing the practice as a tool, as a technique. So the meditation is this attitude of being with whatever is happening right now. I have spoken before, I said, what's happening if you come to the sitting and say, now I understand to meditate is to be present, therefore I will be present. Fair enough. But if we place this as a name, then it doesn't work. We are placing that in the future. So what to do then? It is to be aware how I am not present now. To start exactly where we are, not to start where we would like to be. Now I come in my sitting and I feel, for example, I am distracted. In this understanding, in this awareness that maybe I am distracted, that's where the presence lies. In awareness of my not being present, so to speak. And that's only how we can really be in touch with our meditation. Not because now I have a beautiful aim about what it means to be present, complete, inner peace, freedom, all that. The freedom will be inner peace or completeness when I am completely with what's happening now. And when I am with the distraction or the sense of not being present. And that's work for any kind of experience. It's not that now we have to aim at something better, but when we are fully aware of the lack which is happening now, the full awareness of the lack which is happening now, allow completeness to be here. Not because we find what we hope or what we may imagine will be missing, when we can be fully experiencing the sense of lack, this time there is completeness and there is no more any lack in our experience. So you see, it's never are we stepping in the processes of time. Never, at no time. We may imagine, yes, a little bit now is not very clear. I just will be present when I will not have this pain. So first I try to have this pain and next. So now that's fine. You know, it's better. It's like that will be it. So therefore it's better and eat which is nice. If I'm crooked now, for example, fine. So what I have to be aware now is not say, oh no, that doesn't work. So first I have to come and be very well, and then that I will be present. I can be fully present in this crooked position with a sense of completeness. Nothing will be lacking. So in the same in our meditation, we don't need to first improve everything and then now that's time to be present. It is the contrary. When we can really start to discover, and actually we are lucky it is this way. If in our meditation first we need to put everything perfect and then that will be okay to be present, then I don't know how many years and centuries it will take us that everything will be perfect. So we can really experience the fullness of our presence even when something is not fine, when something is crooked, when something is not right. This is the quality of our experiencing. When we totally are experiencing, then at this time we are fully and totally present. At this time there is a completeness, a sense of nothing is lacking. I've mentioned the control, the need to control, or the position of control, which is a sign in a sense. As long as we can control, it means that we are outside of the experience. As long as we can control our meditation, we are not in the meditation. When we are really experiencing the meditation at this time, we are in the impossibility of controlling, and also at this time there is no need to control. Doesn't make sense. This time doesn't make sense. Experience is being the completeness, nothing is outside of it. Therefore, why should one control it, and with what could one control it? So in the fullness of the experience, we are in the impossibility of controlling, and also in the non-necessity to control. Speak a little bit more about the experience of our meditation when we can be fully, completely with what's happening. We may understand that the possibility of control is a sign that we are not fully experiencing, that we are still at a distance of the experience. We are still at a distance of ourselves, so to speak. There is a Chinese saying about meditation, I remember well, which says, the path is not difficult for those who have no preferences. Seems fine. Path is not difficult for those who have no preferences. Okay, so that means, in a sense, I have no preference, so it doesn't matter either. It means that I am in a position where I could choose, but I have no preferences, therefore I don't choose. It doesn't matter. So the path is not difficult for those who have no preference. But in a sense it is slightly misleading. Because there is choice only if we are outside of the experience. As long as there is choice, it means that we are not fully with the experience. There is choice if we are outside of the experience. When we experience fully, in the fullness of the experience, there is nothing else. Nothing else. Because there is a fullness of the experience, nothing is outside of it. Therefore, no choice. Nothing else. When there is only one thing, how to speak about choice? So in the fullness of the experience, there is no choice. So the meditation is in a state of balance when there is impossibility of choosing. Not because one is so much bound that there is no choice. There is no choice at this time because there is no other. And that's what completeness means. That's what fullness means. Fullness doesn't mean that I feel quite big, quite very big, very, very big. But the fullness means that there is nothing other. And in this being nothing other, there is no choice. In this nothing other, this time, that may be our true home. the fullness of our presence, nothing is lacking, not hidden by the notion of time, not kept at a distance by the notion of control, not kept at a distance by the notion of choice, just the fullness of our experiencing. And at such a time, that is our true home. At such a time, there is no exile anymore. So our meditation is really to be able to find or to experience fully our true home. And that can be experienced at any time. Nothing is lacking at any instant for us not to experience. We are always in our true home, but we don't realize it most of the time because we are busy with the notion of time, of control, of fragmentation, of improvement. So we are in a fantastic situation where we are always and only in our true home, yet we may experience that as being in exile. Yet we are in our true home. We can never be outside of it. It is impossible. I want to link that with beautiful notion in Buddhist tradition and speak in my own way, I don't know if it's very precise, the notion of samsara and nirvana. So samsara will be the position of exile. Something is lacking, we are not where we should be, where we like to be. So in a sense, samsara is a notion of bondage, limitation, and nirvana is a state of freedom. But exactly how, in the same way as we may feel in exile in our true home, in the same way, it is not that the bondage that is described as samsara is truly existing and that we should get rid of, in a sense, to reach nirvana. It is due to our confusion that we don't realize that our nature is freedom. Exactly as we don't realize that we are in our true home, yet we are always in our true home, in the same way, it's not that we are in a position of bondage from which we should go away to a position of freedom. We are, by essence, free, yet for some reason, because of confusion, we perceive that as bondage. So it's not that we need to go from bondage to freedom. We are in a position of freedom. Due to confusion, we perceive that as bondage. The implication, as I understand it, and is just my own reflection, has nothing to do maybe with Buddhist tradition, is that it's fantastic because we are neither obliged to be bound, neither are we obliged to be free. We are in a position in between where it's depending, it's just up to us either to be free or to be in bondage. So nobody, nothing is imposing onto us either to be in bondage or to be in freedom. We have the freedom even to be in bondage or in freedom, because the bondage is not truly existing. So it's a position that we could imagine a different type of situation where we will be, everybody would be free, we could not choose to be bound. Or our bondage will be so solid, real, no way to be free. But this situation, in a sense, is much richer. We are free, and we perceive this freedom as bondage. And it's up to us to decide. Of course, it's just not a matter of saying, yes, actually I choose freedom. And not that easy, yet through our practice, through our sense, or wish for inner freedom, that in a sense we can choose either to experience what we're experiencing as a state of freedom or as a state of bondage. This is ultimate freedom for us, to be either in bondage or in freedom. Nothing is imposed unto us, neither freedom nor bondage. So we'll just sit in silence for a few minutes.